You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. Broadway fans might not immediately know her name, but soprano Sharon Azrieli has enjoyed international success and numerous awards recognizing not only her as a performer in her native Canada, but around the world. In addition to opera, she is working in the Broadway genre as well. The reason I wanted to talk to her on this podcast was about all her philanthropic work in arts education, in her support of American Israeli culture, and in creating her own foundation. Sharon, welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's so fun to get to know somebody new. So a lot of times I have old friends on the podcast, but you're someone that I haven't met before. So I was thinking that I guess you as an artist, as a singer, have to do warm-up exercises. So I figured let's do a little warm-up where I ask you a few rapid-fire questions and you answer them so I can get to know you better.
Okay.
Okay. So with the first thing that comes to your mind, if you could be part of any fictional family from a Broadway show or a movie, an opera or a television show, what Ooh. Family would you want to be a member of?
Oh, I love that question. Oh, I don't know why this comes to my mind, but I would want to be a member of the Addams Family.
Do-do-do-do.
Yeah. And then you have to ask yourself, like, who do you want to be in that family? I just love, and you know, this is terrible because now I forget the names of everybody, but I love the Angelica Jolie, you know.
Morticia, right?
Morticia, right?
Yeah.
I just think she's fabulous. I just love her. And, you know, she has such a great relationship with her husband, right? Mm-hmm. And they're just madly in love after all those years. I think that's ideal. I just love that.
Okay, I love this answer. No one has ever said that before. So thank you for that. Sharon, what are three words that you would say describe you?
So, I think the first one would be persistent, right? Persistent, because I've been in this business or career for a really long time. Mm. And you have to be persistent, right, in order to do that. The second one is, you know, I don't know if it's either stupid or not stupid, depending on the day, right? Because you have to be smart in some ways. And then I would say, so maybe that's the first one. But then on the other hand, you have to have blinders on. You know what I mean? In mm-hmm. another way, so that you ignore the difficulties in a certain way. I don't mean stupid, but I mean pointedly, willfully ignorant. If you were aware, or if you choose to be aware of all the difficulties.
Mm-hmm. You'd probably give up, right?
Right. Right. Right?
Right. So I think that goes with persistent. So yes, I see it. I see the pattern here.
I'm sorry.
No, that's good.
Being
No, that's good. I think we're going to go with persistent, persistent, and persistent.
Well, yes, but a smart kind of a persistent, because you have to choose your you know, choose your battles, and you mm-hmm. have to choose your, you know, your road. So
where's your happy place?
My happy place. I have a few. I think you have to have more than one. So a happy place can be, you know, half an hour of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Happy place could be half an hour in the, you know, giving my grandson. I have a new grandson.
Oh, congratulations.
So, my son got married very early, and then he had a baby right away. And so now I have a baby grandson. And so giving him a bath is one of my best happy places. A happy place can be, you know, exercising in the pool.
Mm. I like the grandson happy place.
That sounds wonderful. That's one of the best. Yeah.
So being an artist, I have to ask you, what is your favorite music or song, or is there something special where you just hear something and it's like, that's it, that's the ultimate for me, or that makes you, that touches you more than anything else?
So that's, you're asking all these wonderful questions, and I would have to say, does it depends on what am I working on at the moment.
Mm.
And I'm so lucky that I have gotten to work on such great music throughout my career. And also I'm lucky that at each moment or each, you know, time in my life, what I have gotten to work on has been what I have loved. And, or let's say I have loved everything that I've gotten to work mm-hmm. on. But I've also, you know, chosen, like I remember when I was first starting, I just had graduated from Juilliard, and I was offered to sing Lulu by Berg, you know, at the Canadian Opera. And I said no, you know, because I didn't love it. And I was lucky enough, or maybe arrogant, I don't know. I just said, you know what? That's not why I went into opera. And I was so, so lucky that the next thing that they offered me was to cover Juliet in Romeo and Juliet and Mimi in La Boheme. And I was like, yeah, that's more like it. And so I was so lucky that I got to sing those kind of roles. And so at each step, I would say I was lucky that I loved the music that I got to sing. And so recently, just now, I just made an album of Michel Legrand music. Mm. So I'm moving into jazz now, and I love it. I always have loved jazz, and I just love this music. It's wonderful. Or I just made this album with the legendary Frank Wildhorn,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be making another album with him this year coming up. So I'm lucky. I just love this music.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What do you most give a damn about?
Oh.
I mean, these days there's a lot to give a damn about.
Yeah. Well, you don't want me to get started.
Well, no, these are the short questions. We'll get into the longer questions later. So is there one thing where you just go, I care most about this right now, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you had to, I don't want to get into a whole political conversation with you, but you know, I was the first female cantor in Montreal, and so if you had to make me, you know, take a stand on something, it's probably going to be women's rights. So if we're I don't want this to be, because we're talking about arts and philanthropy, but it is somewhere in the women's rights discussion.
Great. And what would you say you're most grateful for today?
Oh, I think I've had the luckiest life in the world. I'm so grateful that I was able to lead a life in the arts. Yes, yes, thank God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I was reading about your background, and I'm so impressed because it seems that whatever you do, you really dig in, whether it's, you know, professionally, artistically, and you also philanthropically, you dig in and you do the work. You don't just put your, you know, your money into it. You put all your energy into the causes that are important to you. So before we jump in and talk about that, I want to talk to you a little bit about your background and your childhood, because typically that informs so much of why a person does become an activist or a philanthropist.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about the young Sharon?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, my father was a Holocaust survivor, and
My mother was too, by the way.
Oh, wow. My dad was born in Poland. Where was your mom born?
Vienna.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe you have a similar experience to mine, but growing up, you know, my father didn't like to talk at all about his experience. And I think I didn't even know that my father, I think we thought that my father was born in Israel, actually, until until I was 16. And we only found out like by accident. It was this big drama. He just didn't like to talk about it. But I was not brought up with money at all. My dad didn't, you know, really become successful until a little bit later in my life. And he didn't want me to be a singer. So that was the big story of my life, that he didn't want me to be a singer. Being a performer is not a valued sort of profession in my family. Architect, you know, Indian chief, doctor, lawyer.
Right.
That would have been much better. So he said to me, you know, I'll give you voice lessons if you get into Juilliard. And that's a bit of a catch-22 because, you know, in order to get into Juilliard, you sort of have to already know how to sing. Mm. So my first degree was art history. My second degree was I could draw. I could have probably been an architect. But I really had that thing in my belly, you know, that fire in my belly that I really wanted to sing. So I left. I went to New York City. And I made jewelry in the streets. I ran from the cops. I worked a few jobs. And it did. It took me 3 auditions to get into Juilliard, which, you know,
persistent.
That's why I was saying that. So my parents were very philanthropic, you know, and we are, as a family, we do give back in terms of education, and we, you know, we have this very large foundation now. And so, but I would say that our focus is absolutely on education. And me personally, my focus of my personal philanthropy is absolutely education. And I love to teach and women and children.
We're going to come back to that in a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about your career first. So Juilliard, that's so impressive and so interesting.
Yeah, but I was accepted to Manhattan School of Music. I was accepted to Indiana, all these other places, but that wasn't good.
That wasn't good enough. Well, I have to tell you, like, my mother was a huge opera fan. I mean, she loved it and she played it all the time. It's a bit foreign to me. So you're going to have to take me sort of through, you know, your career in opera. And then, of course, I really want to hear about your work in Broadway as well.
I don't think there's that much to tell. I mean, I got out of school and I was lucky, I immediately started a career, Canadian Opera Company, Sarasota, Opéra de Paris à la Bastille, you know, and I was very lucky and I started a good career. I loved, opera is wonderful. Opera is, you know, well, if you love Broadway, it's very similar, except no microphones, huge orchestra, and even bigger egos, I would say. Except that the egos are mostly the conductor, not really the singers. The singers, I would not say have the biggest egos in opera, because you're a team, you know, it's a team sport.
Right.
It has much less leeway than in Broadway, right? In Broadway, I think the conductor actually accompanies the singers, but in opera, it's like everybody's riding a huge, huge horse, and the horse has to go, and you're on the same. You're absolutely bound by that rhythmic train, and you cannot be a fraction of a beat wrong or off. It's like, you know, when you're jumping rope and you've got to get in, exactly right. And depending on the opera, it can be extremely complicated. Not to mention that the orchestra can look at their music, but the singers are all memorized in their music. They're memorized in their language. They're memorized in their words, and they have to be totally precise. You know,
that's so interesting because you're right. Like Broadway, it's very collaborative, right? With the people on stage, but also with the band or the orchestra, depending on the show. So this, I understand that now. Like your wave that you're surfing is the music, right?
Yeah, Yeah. But in opera, you know, I don't think people understand. And so some of the larger opera houses like the Met, mm-hmm. or, you know, the ones in Europe, they still have a prompter, right? Who is under, it's like this person, this wonderful person who knows every word of every, like, for example, the Metropolitan Opera is such a huge house. It's 5,000 seats, right? Mm-hmm. And by the time you're singing all the way back there, there's actually acoustically a lapse in time so that you're singing. And by the, if you look at the conductor's little hand all the way, maybe it's like a quarter of a mile, okay? By the time you reach him, you're going to be late. So you actually can't look at the conductor. You have to look at the prompter. And the prompter, this little person in their little booth under the stage, is telling you when to actually sing. And they're giving you, thank God, they're giving you the first syllable of your word. Because you want to be actually in the timing with the prompter, not the conductor. Because the conductor is conducting the orchestra, who's actually way far ahead of you. Do you,
wow.
You understand what I'm
yes,
saying?
Yes, I do. This is fascinating. I didn't expect to learn so much today. This is great.
Right? But, yeah. But in a Broadway production, you actually, you don't know where the band might be. The band might be up above you. They could be on either side of you. Mm-hmm. They could split up they can split them up, but you have a mic on you and you have ears in you and you have prompter, teleprompters, right, on mm-hmm. either side of you. So you have a much more collaborative feel. You're like inside of the band, right?
Right.
And nobody's going to really go on without you. But in opera, if you screw up by one half of a beat, one quarter of an eighth note, whatever you do, bam, they're going on without you. They don't care.
Wow.
The show must go on.
Uh-huh.
In opera, that so much more applies than, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so interesting. Tell us a little bit about your Broadway work.
So in Broadway, I mean, I have not been lucky enough to be actually on Broadway yet. It is a dream. It is a really big dream of mine. Played in Atlanta, in Southeastern Savoyards, you know, in Gilbert and Sullivan. I loved it. I did actually with Atlanta Opera, we did Gilbert and Sullivan. I did do a lot of recording for Off-Broadway in the Fiddler on the Roof recording. And I've done Broadway recording with a great, brilliant, wonderful conductor, Marvin Laird. And with the Frank Lee Sharon recording with Frank Waldhorn. Mm-hmm. And the orchestrator for that just had his show on Broadway, Jason Howland. Amazing,
right.
Wonderful orchestrator and arranger and composer. And I'm about to make my second Frank Waldhorn album. So, and I have things that I can't say yet, but
no spoilers.
I hope will happen. So I'll be back, I hope, to tell
I hope
you.
So, yeah.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's talk a little bit about your philanthropic work. So let's go back to education. It's, you know, it's interesting because people get involved in different causes and charities. And there's usually like a reason. It touches them because they had or they didn't have it, or a family member is impacted by something. But education seems to be one of those things where, you know, pretty much everybody can rally around the fact that education is really important. Arts education, you know, not everybody values that the same way, as we know here
it's
in
so
America.
True. It's,
but
yeah.
But I'm a huge, you know, arts education to me is just so important because it informs so much of who you are as a person, right?
Yep.
Whether you have, you know, I mean, I have no talent whatsoever. So, but you know,
don't say that.
Well, you know what though? My mom, you know, again, Holocaust survivor, came here, but for her, you know, culture and arts were really important. So growing up in Los Angeles, we went to the opera. We went to hear, you know, orchestras. We went to Broadway shows that were on tour here. We went to art festivals. So she felt like arts education was part of sort of my cultural diet. And, right. And that was really important. And I'm, you know, there's proof that that does make you a more well-rounded person, a more empathetic person. It helps you with your other parts of education. So tell us why and how you came to, you know, focus on education in your philanthropic endeavors.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I do also support, like, for example, this past year, especially with COVID, there's a wonderful organization in Canada called Shea Doors, which is homeless shelters for women. That's very important to me. And I was thinking about that, like there's places that I'd like to know more about that give shelter to women. This is very important. But very much like I just created a program in Montreal, which is a collaborative pianist education. So, for example, singers need pianists, right? But who teaches the pianists, right? So, for opera, for example, we singers, we need to learn French, we need to learn Italian, we need to learn German, we need to learn all these languages. So who's going to teach us those? Well, normally it's a coach. Or if you're a jazz singer, you know, who's going to teach us those songs? That's the coach. Who teaches the coach, right? Mm-hmm. How do the pianists learn? So I created a program for pianists, right? That's going to bring the best of all the coaches to teach the pianists. Then the pianists are going to go out there and teach the singers. So that's a collaborative program between University of Montreal and McGill.
Mm.
I think it's the first of its kind, actually, in Canada. So I'm really proud about it. I created a program for the Azrieli Foundation, which is the first of its kind composition prize for new Jewish music. And the idea is to get composers to create new music. The first prize was for new Jewish music. And then the second prize is Canadian music, actually. So the question is, well, what is Jewish music? Which is sparked a whole debate, which is very interesting.
And what is Canadian music?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a fascinating question, but you have to go onto the Azrieli Foundation website. Now the third one, that fourth and last final prize that we're going to be launching this year is an international prize. So anybody from anywhere can go onto the website and apply for this prize. And it is, so if you're Ukrainian, write Ukrainian music. If you're Viennese, write Viennese music, you know, whatever is your affiliation, whatever is your in your heart, write that. So I'm very excited.
And these are all through your foundation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when did you establish your foundation?
That's the Family Foundation, the Azrieli Foundation. I think it was established in 1989.
And the mission, what's the mission for the foundation?
It's too big to tell you here on the website. No, everybody can just go on AzrieliFoundation.org.
You know, as far as the programs, so you just mentioned a few, but I know that you're involved in so many other things. And I just wonder, you know, sort of looking at the bigger picture, it sounds like arts education, particularly music, women's rights, these are things that are that really touch your heart, right? That are passion points for you and your philanthropy. Any other causes?
Children. I think that, so another thing that I really got into this past 2 years, there's a program that was started in Venezuela, and now the biggest success story is Gustavo Dudamel. I'm sure you've heard of
him. Yes, absolutely.
So it's called El Sistema, right? And they took these kids, you know, off the street, and they gave them, like, you know, basically toy instruments, and they made musicians out of them. Mm. And so we've been trying to do that in Canada. I sang in Miami 2 years ago, mm-hmm. I think right before COVID. And the conductor was a very big proponent of this. And it's something that I'd really like to get more involved in.
So the idea is to offer children after-school programming to enhance their arts education, their music.
Music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that idea.
I know that we've got, you know, here in the U.S., there are lots of organizations that do that as well, particularly for, you know, students who are at risk and don't have those services as part of their curriculum in school. And, you know, philanthropy, though, it seems to me something that obviously is a big part of your family. Do you all sit around and discuss, hey, here are the things that are important, or, hey, let's focus on this strategy, or, you know, how do you decide what you're going to support? Is it like a family meeting?
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, the foundation is quite a large foundation.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, we have quarterly meetings. It's not just the family. There are four outside directors, and people will bring organizations that have to be charitable organizations. You know, they have to meet certain criteria. They have to be good.
Right.
And they have to be vetted. And we really do a lot of work. We really look into them, and we.
So you're not just writing a check. You're actually.
No.
Actually dig in and.
Oh yeah. And not only that, but for example, in the program that I created, I mean, I sit on an advisory council, and we have juries for each of the prizes. Mm-hmm. And I spend many hours per month. I mean, the applications for the compositions come in, and I have to actually go through each one to see, do they meet the criteria? No, it's a huge job.
Yeah, it sounds
really, yeah.
And making the commitment to, you know, that time commitment, that's a big time commitment.
Yeah.
You know, the listeners to this podcast, they often ask, you know, we don't have a big bank account where we can write lots of checks. And we don't have a social media platform where we can talk about things that are important to us. What advice would you give people listening to this podcast about how they could become more philanthropic?
I often hear people say, just get involved in some organization that you like as a volunteer, you know? So, for example, one of my favorite orchestras that I've tried to help is a local orchestra, you know, where I actually grew up, because my father was friends with the first violinist when he was young. Mm. And then when I was first becoming a singer, the conductor actually gave me one of my first jobs singing. And so I kept in touch with that orchestra. And then as I became more philanthropic, I started to help them. And I got onto their board, and I tried to help them to raise money. And I noticed that they have a wonderful cadre of volunteers. And so what I would say is to people who don't have a lot of money to help, you know, in terms of just money, find something that you love. Like if you love going to the opera, then maybe they need volunteers in your local, if you have a local opera company, mm-hmm. or if you love going to theater, maybe there's a local theater that needs people to help, I don't know, give out programs, mm-hmm. or to help to be on their PR. I think every organization locally can use volunteers. That's what I that's
yeah,
what I would say.
Give
get,
local.
Get involved.
Yeah, so participate
yeah.
locally.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people, that's really good advice.
Give time.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have money, give time.
Oh, nice quote.
And plus, it's a beautiful community building exercise. And I think, you know, another thing that happened with COVID, everybody has been in their house, you know, for 3 years. Everybody's been, you know, stuck at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that everybody's dying to get out a little bit, you know, but also afraid. So maybe people are afraid to go into the theater, but maybe there's a way, sort of an in-between step, you know. So maybe the local theater has a meeting, you know, where it's not, you know, hundreds of people, but maybe it's just 10 or 20, and you can get involved in their board. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, also, yeah, I mean, it's funny because we've been talking about this. So reentry into the real world, you know, I mean, some people are just like, okay, I'm ready. And they just, you know, boom back in. But I know that I, you know, have, I had to go slow to get back into the world again.
Yeah.
Because I was so used to sort of this different life, yeah. this different beat to my life,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And different cadence. So it's taken me a little bit of time to sort of jump back into the, you know, New York crazy scene again. Yeah.
A lot of people are not ready to go into a closed room with 300 people. They're just not. Like I noticed in performances, like especially older people, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yet they crave, you know, the community.
Absolutely. And doing it locally is smaller and maybe more manageable. So, I mean, I think the idea of giving locally and being part of your community is definitely something I keep hearing as a theme about people wanting to give back, starting locally, starting smaller. And you're right, after COVID, that could be a nice first step.
One of my local philanthropies that I help with was doing small concerts, going to people's houses and performing in their backyards and performing, like a few neighboring people would, they would perform in backyards for like little neighborhoods, you know? That was really nice.
That's really nice. Yeah, that's very nice. Any last words about the idea of giving back and philanthropy and just doing good in the world?
Yeah, they say that the more that you do, the more it helps you, yourself. I don't know. I think it's probably true.
I think it's probably true, too. So in which case, you do a lot. So I hope you feel really good about yourself, because you should.
Yeah, I think. And the other thing I would say is do what you love.
Thank you. Well, I loved having you on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Broadway Gives Back podcast. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, editor, and friend, Jim Lochner. And thank you to everyone at BPN, including Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and Kimberly Garris. I'd also like to thank Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency and Eric Becker from Broderick Street Music. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back. Thanks so much.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.